You are listening to the Magnetic Marketing Marketing Secret Gold Members Only Podcast.
You know, so the first time I saw you speak, this is going back to like around 2007, 2008. One of the things you said at a seminar always stuck with me, Dan, was, and I believe it was the Dallas Super Conference specifically, you made a point that, you know, what we in the audience are doing now, we probably won't be doing in, the number I think you gave was 8 years. The point was down the road, whatever business we're in currently, we're likely to have that changed over time. So can you talk more about that? Because that's definitely something I've seen for myself. Yeah.
I mean, you either change it or it gets changed for you, right? That's a version of President Bush number two's old line of, if you don't have an agenda, there are other people who'll be happy to provide you with one. So hardly any business gets to totally stay the same for more than a decade, if that long. That doesn't mean that the foundational principles of it or structure of it has to change, but some aspects certainly have to deal with changing situations on the ground in customer interests and preferences, the changes in media, the changes in technology, competitive changes, sort of big social and economic trends. Right now, you know, there's been a big kind of geographic shift. Leaving certain places in bigger numbers at all at one time than has been seen since, you know, we conquered the West, and congregating in areas in bigger numbers all at one time. So that's an example of, you know, a monster-sized trend that you can't ignore, not just if you're in the real estate business, but, you know, if you're in almost any business. So there are businesses that set out to be one thing and then wind up being something else altogether. Amazon's as good a big example of that as any. And to this day, Amazon is essentially not making any money as a retailer, although most of the public thinks of them as that. Really, almost all their profit is coming from AWS services to other companies and from advertising revenue. So there's businesses that set out to be one thing. There's businesses that change and expand range of services or products as their customers want or need things or will buy things. So if you look at Disney, right, they started as parks. And in business, there's a tremendous temptation to respond to imposed change or inventive change, suggested change, with the line, that's not the business we're in. And it's almost as damaging as the line, but my business is different. So if you look at a breakdown of Disney's businesses, one of the things they've done is they kept asking again and again and again, gee, if the customer will come and stay in the park with us for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, what else will they pay to do with us? Well, they'll certainly stay in our hotels instead of somebody else's hotels. So now we're in the hotel and the resort business. If they'll stay in hotels, they'll buy timeshares. So now we're in the timeshare business. be if they'll buy timeshares, they'll probably go on cruises. Now we're in the cruise business, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And you can stop that at any point with the, that's not the business we're in. The book publishing industry, which is, you know, on its very slow death march, is run by a complete cabal of idiots at the top who have never wanted to hear about back end, the business that you can have built by and behind the best selling book. Their answer, and I have sat in the boardrooms of big publishing companies, and I have sat with very small founder run publishing companies, the answer from all of them has always been the same. That's not the business we're in. They are very much in the next book business. And it's killing them, and it will eventually kill them, and it's completely unnecessary. So one way or another, you confront opportunity to change and need to change that you may not necessarily welcome, and imposition of change all the time. Some of it is dramatic and sudden, like in our world, all of a sudden, everybody's locked up, nobody can come to a conference, and as a practical matter, nobody can get on airplanes and travel. That's, you know, a pretty abrupt and sudden change. There are times it's evolutionary before it's revolutionary. Oh, if you're particularly astute, you can be ahead of it instead of chasing it. I think the three things that are always important to remember about change is, one, not to confuse temporary conditions with permanent conditions and overreact to them. That happened to a lot of companies with the virus and the lockdown. Amazon grossly overbuilt distribution center capability and staffing. They are now going back in the other direction painfully and expensively. And, you know, a real example of that is Peloton. So they looked at a temporary giant surge in sales as a permanent situation, and they staffed for it and they built capability for it. And of course, it was being driven by the fact that people couldn't leave their houses or apartments. And as soon as they could leave their houses or apartments, a significant number of them stopped paying their monthly Peloton dues and went back to the gym or went back to walking around the park. So temporary permanence an issue. Second thing is, not all change is progress. So is this particular change really progress or is it not? And then last is it directly relevant to you or is it a distraction to you from the goals that you are pursuing?
So, you know, there's been a big shakeup. Well, back to the Amazon thing real quick. So I'm sure you saw recently their stock is down 40%. And then Bezos coming out saying, hey, everybody, stop making big purchases, which I was like, wow, okay. So, yeah, there's a lot of change there. But there's also been a lot of change this year in media. And I'd like to talk about, if we can discuss, you know, the death of media. As an info marketer myself and as a small brick and mortar business owner myself simultaneously, you know, what we all want, Dan, is to set up a marketing piece, be it offline or on, and just let it ride and get back to doing whatever we do. But media changes, and this year has been incredible with the changes, especially at Facebook, letting go 11,000 people, Twitter letting go 3,700, print media continue to do what it does. So can you talk about the importance of being able to adapt to the death of media, your advice on, as info marketers or brick and mortar owners, on what we need to be doing on, you know, of course, always keeping marketing at the front. So being aware that, that media does die, and then how should we respond to that?
Well, so I'm going to differ with you a little in that virtually no offline media has died in my lifetime. There have been funerals held a lot that were predictive and were false. AM radio, for example, almost died and became useless as an advertising media till conservative talk rescued it. And it came roaring back to life and is a valuable media locally and nationally for all sorts of businesses, as is Sirius satellite radio. And death of the newspaper, that funeral has been held, I don't know, a lot, and still wrong. Newspaper advertising works locally for all sorts of businesses, and numbers are down, but then by and large, the rates reflect the numbers, so still buying eyeballs at an affordable price for any number of kinds of businesses. And nationally, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, Investors Business Daily, our national newspapers are alive and well and flourishing. USA Today is the weakest of them, and its circulation is the lowest. It took a huge hit during the lockdowns, as a lot of USA Today's circulation is newsstand purchase, airports, and hotels. And that stopped. But there, I have a client right now advertising in USA Today, and they're, you know, and they're doing fine. Direct mail, of course, that funeral's been held a lot with the advent of the internet and the online media. People are holding that funeral like today. And they're, of course, dead ass wrong. As a matter of fact, while overall mail volume is down, that's the consumer volume. The commercial volume, use of mail by businesses, is up despite the rate increases year over year, and has been year over year for at least the past 5 years that I know of. They'll pronounce the Yellow Pages dead. There are people that don't even know what the Yellow Pages is. However, if you go find one and you find the prior year's one, you will find a lot of advertisers who were in the Yellow Pages last year and are in the Yellow Pages again. And they can't all be stupid. Again, I have clients who downstream, their members that they advise are in the Yellow Pages. In some cases, they're in the Yellow Pages in a bigger way than they were 5 years ago. Most of the space has gone down. And I can go on and on and on. So I've not seen an offline media actually die in the entire time that I've been dealing with media. TV infomercials, for example, now they were stopped for a period of time by law, but then they came back. Right now, they are not what they were, because people, by and large, don't watch TV by running the dial to find something to watch, which is a requisite for all sorts of infomercials. However, the infomercial is still alive and well and making people rich, selling to certain demographics. 50-plus market for both national and local infomercials. It's a thriving combination. everything from big insurance companies like Humana doing half-hour shows about Medicare Advantage plans to Guthy Ranker's skincare shows, now skincare designed for 50-plus, etc. So I've not seen an offline media die. I'll live long enough to see an offline media die. And I think that that is a strong caution to, because they don't live there anymore, and they are one step away from being little characters in Zuckerberg's metaverse. Mm-hmm. They live online, and they do everything digitally. They turn that into another really stupid general statement. They will say, well, nobody uses blank anymore. Recently, I had somebody say, well, nobody watches TV anymore. You know, beg to differ. I have a television. NBC is still there. ABC is still there. Fox is still there. All sorts of independent stations are still there. Cable is still there. So somebody watches TV. So the one place that that is not true. So in audio and video, hard goods, media, obviously the 8-track tape is pretty much dead. Cassette tape is pretty much dead. CD is not dead, despite what people think it say, mm-hmm. but it will be eventually. But the audio media is not dead, and will not die. And the use of a hard goods audio media, whatever that may become, will not die. The same thing is true with video. He's still alive and well, has marketing tools, and has products being sold, but that is diminishing a lot slower than a lot of people think. And the next physical, most people I work with now, we're often sending out the DVD and the thumb drive and the code to go watch the thing online if that's what they prefer doing. But we're still sending hard goods. Whatever the next hard good will be, the use of sending someone a video will not die. Now, online, sort of your point, it's a much different situation. And again, it's not so much that a media or a media category dies, because it doesn't. Like MySpace went away, but now, social media didn't go away and probably won't go away. But it's a much more chaotic media environment. The owners of the media are themselves very confused about whether they're in the media business or they're not in the media business and how to be in the media business. So they keep creating problems for their advertisers as well as for their users, their customers. But speaking from our standpoint, they keep creating problems for their advertisers and their marketers because they're confused. And there's, you know, a pretty tense regulatory environment that threatens to get more intrusive and disruptive than it already is. There's a precipitous decline in the effectiveness of certain things. I mentioned Facebook. Facebook had a very bad year. And Facebook advertisers, for the most part, had all sorts of problems.
Oh, yeah.
In large part because of what Apple did to Facebook. So mm-hmm. this stuff happens at a more constantly disruptive pace with online media than it does with offline media. Other than viewer habits, there's literally been no change caused by the television media to the use of infomercials. There's literally been no change by the radio media, the use of radio commercials. There's been no change in direct mail. They don't open the envelopes and run the letters through an algorithm to, if you've offended transgender midgets, and then they won't deliver your mail. That's not happening. So what's going on online does not yet go on offline. And the chaos, the like constant change, this thing going to be operating tomorrow morning the same way it is today, makes it really, really tough for advertisers and marketers. And it is its own cautionary warning, which is that online media is really all one media, one thing, not 50 different things. It's one thing because it is all integrated. You advertise on Amazon, that's fine, but Amazon is integrated with Google. And if you advertise on Facebook, Facebook's integrated with Apple, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So people who think that they are exercising diversity equals stability by using 30 different online media outlets, they're wrong. They're building dependence on one thing. And so the mandate is at least to be online and offline, not to be online only. There was a brief period of time where that worked and made sense and was relatively stable and safe. But that's not what it is now.
Absolutely. Let's kind of shift gears on this, and especially with change. So whether someone, you know, listening, reading this is a info marketer with staff or a brick and mortar with staff, there's a lot of change. It's been a very tumultuous year for employers, and I am an employer of a lot of people. So Dan, you know, one of my all-time favorite books of yours is The Ruthless Management of People and Profits. My coaching clients as well, we love that book. I think what happens with most business owners, info or brick and mortar, what they want to do is they want to get somebody in a seat. They want to put them in there. They stay there for 5 years, right? And mission accomplished, you know? However, as you know, and as you teach, you know, we have to react to when there's problems and changes. So can you kind of talk about that, you know, what we want as entrepreneurs, but what we need to do really with changes in staff, when people are underperforming, when people are not accomplishing what we need them to do, and how that normally goes. So any thoughts on how to deal with changes in staff?
Well, so we've had this sort of weird phenomenon with worker participation, and people ought not be distracted by the unemployment number. The number that really matters is the workforce participation number, which tells you the availability of staff. And that number is toilet. And it really has been for the last 2.5 years or so, which coincides with political event. There are 14 states sending out free money, claim to have been adversely affected by the virus. But we're still distributing at the state level. There's 5 cities now that have guaranteed income experiments going on. And the federal government is still gushing money at people, reality, and promising it to them as well. And that has contributed to this "I don't need to work right now" thing. The availability of gig employment that people can go do whenever they feel like it. Sign on, sign off. Uberization. Variety of businesses. Further, has made a mess of this. So the employers have, for that reason, and for the, and because they've been, let themselves become intimidated by what is really a small, noisy minority of super woke folk. In big business, they've let the HR department become the most important part of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And in small business, it's even harder to fight the workforce participation factor because small independent restaurant cannot match what Applebee's is willing to do, you know, in order to get people. So there's been an increased tendency not to manage your own business out of fear and intimidation. So, not to ruffle anybody's feathers, if we go talk to Barbara about the shitty way she's answering the phone,
mm-hmm.
Barbara will just quit. And then I won't have anybody to answer the phone, right? I mean, so there's no doubt that this dynamic has been there. Fortunately, it's beginning to swing back in the other direction. The workforce participation number is not yet improving much, but the unemployment is rising, and the layoffs and the job freezes are rising. These are trailing indicators, so people aren't really going to see it statistically and honestly reported in the news until the first quarter of 2023, but it is being anecdotally reported in the news, just as you just said. This company laying off 13,000, this company laying off 6,000, this mm-hmm. company imposing a hiring freeze when they were hiring, et cetera, et cetera. So the desire of somebody to get and keep a job will be coming back in the employer's favor, mostly thanks to the deep and broad recession we're going to be in for at least 2023, if not beyond. So if you want to look for a silver lining and you're an employer, there it is. But under no circumstance should the business owner sacrifice managing their company to letting or bad behavior occur throughout that company, because life is long and the damage that does now will live with you long after the difficulty of getting employees has passed. I had an experience yesterday with a company I use all the time. Won't go through the gory details, but a person they sent was horrendous, horrendous, indescribably horrendous. And the first part of the answer I got from the manager was, we're kind of aware of these problems with this person, but we don't have enough people. So we're living with it.
Right.
Well, you may be living with it, but I'm not going to live with it, and I'm not going to spend another dime with you as long as I live.
Mm-hmm.
So now how smart was that?
Right.
So, and by the way, it seems that people like the Silicon Valley Titans somehow must have gotten their hands on copies of the Ruthless Management book.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like they're catching up to me after all this time. So the mandate more intense, but it is always a mandate that business owners don't like to hear, which is, A, there's no point in hiring if you are not going to hire carefully and you are not going to try to hire people who want to win in their jobs. And then you are going to train, coach, and law enforce on a current, lifetime, ongoing basis. Can't have the quarterly performance review, particularly in a relatively small business. If you have three kids and they're 6 years old, 10 years old, and 14 year old, and you once a quarter have a discussion with them about their behavior, how is that going to work out?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be sitting in a burned out house on the ground before you ever get to have a quarterly, you know, review. So this stuff doesn't work at the small business level. It doesn't really work at the corporate level either, but size of corporation hides a lot of sins that are unaffordable in small business. So if you are going to have staff, it comes with responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It comes with a price greater than their salary. And it comes with time having to be devoted to getting peak performance out of staff. And the other thing, not talked about much in that book, but that I have talked about elsewhere, including in a recent masterclass, is mm-hmm. that most businesses in this kind of environment are not going to solve their staffing problems with Indeed.com. You've got to recruit, not just advertise for people. And by recruit, I mean you got to find them. You got to ask your pastor. You got to ask friends. You got to ask peers. You got to ask current good employees. And you got to be on the lookout for people who, by attitude, shine where they are. And most jobs in small businesses, the aptitude can be taught. The attitude that can't be taught. In my horrible experience yesterday, in the entire day, there were two people who shined of their own initiative. They were clerks and dealers. Now, if I had a dental office, if I had a restaurant, I had any small brick and mortar business where I needed front of the store people and I could outpay dealer, I would have recruited these two in a hot second. And that's what you got to do in a difficult labor environment, is you got to find, you got to recruit people who are outperforming their minor league jobs when you can offer them a better opportunity.
And that's huge. And it leads into my next question, which is, you know, we're, as of this taping, you know, heading into the new year. And I have not heard any reports, Dan, in the media that I consume that it's going to be an awesome year. I've heard a lot of, you know, kind of predictions of how bad it's going to be this coming year. So I'm just curious, you know, two things for you, you know, as a business owner, multiple business owner for myself, you know, I'm thinking the only really way out of this is we're going to have to, I'm going to have to sell my way out of it. I mean, get better at marketing, change the marketing, dig deeper with customers, all the stuff you teach in your book. But while we've got you, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the year ahead, predictions,
well,
and also solutions. Yeah.
Yeah. So the most important thing to know is that basically same amount of available money is always out there. Every once in a while, liquidity itself freezes up, but I've probably only seen that twice in my entire business career and for short periods of time. The money moves around, so who has it changes. Who is willing to spend it changes from time to time. But the actual availability of money doesn't. So, to your point, you may need to change the way you position and present what you sell. You may need to change the advertising and marketing methodology of what you sell. You may need to change who you sell it to. You may need to change place where you sell it. I don't necessarily mean by uprooting your business and moving it to another state, although if you happen to be in California, I would suggest. Mm-hmm. but I would get out before they actually build a wall and don't let you leave. But, you know, place strategy is where you go exhibit, where you cooperatively market with, if you're a chiropractor, in a health food store every Saturday, et cetera. So you may need to change one or two or any of these things. I saw a story just, I don't know, last week, the super high-end purse market, women's mm-hmm. purses that, like,
Kate Spade.
Are Fendi, you know, they're limited edition and they're $4,000, they're $8,000, they're $40,000. The one that was shown on the thing I saw on TV, it just sold for $310,000. It's a purse. Well, their sales are actually booming, but they've changed a lot of things. They're selling a lot of these now at Sotheby's in auctions, like mm-hmm. sell rare art and other collectibles, and they're being pitched as investments. And so they're actually competing with things like art, antiques, and they've geographically moved into three markets, and actually their number one buyer group is 25 to 35 years of age and rolling in dough. So 5 years ago, they were opening more stores. They had stores, right, in super high-end places. Now they're auction. It's fascinating. So, you know, the marketing to the affluent book was written right before the 2008 crash. Right. And the point of that was you had to change who you sell to. And the pyramid that's in it shows a little drawing of a pyramid with the middle taken out. And we are there again. So the free money, first of all, is flowing to the bottom of the economic pyramid, and it's flowing to the very top of the economic pyramid. It ain't flowing to the people in the middle. The middle income earners are the ones that are getting slaughtered. And they're the ones who open up their 401k statement and obsess over it, even though they're not going to do anything about it for another decade. But it depresses them, and they don't spend any money. The people at the bottom don't have a 401k. And the people at the top don't look at it if they do have one. So we're right back where we were when I wrote the affluent book in terms of the money pyramid, consumer spending pyramid, and who you should be selling to. Now, you can put all that under the umbrella that you did. of you sell your way through this, over this, and beyond this. And opportunities come with that because this kills off a number of competitors. If they don't actually die, they roll up in a fetal position and they stop doing anything.
Right.
So their ad spend goes away. Their prominence in a market diminishes and dwindles. So there are fewer people, business owners, in almost every category competing. And there are even fewer competing toward the top, toward the truly affluent customer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's opportunity in this. That doesn't mean it's not painful, and it doesn't mean it's not difficult, because it is, but it is doable. There are all sorts of businesses who not only thrive during inflation, stagflation, recession, but that take market share, that expand, that diversify products and services in creative ways that can last. So marketing is where the money is, you know, period. But now money is all about your marketing.
As we wind down, you know, Dan, you've had a saying, and you could remind me where this was. I can't remember if it was a book or a speech, but you have a saying, and it's about you're dealing with constant change. That as business owners, again, so many of us, we just want to open the door. We want to think like it's what I call the Spock syndrome, the scientist. You know, we put A in place, and we put B, and we put C, and we walk away, and everything runs. But in my experience, you know, business is a battlefield, and really just always you kind of a mess. We have to clean up. So, you know, you said years ago, and it helped us get through 2008, it helped us get through COVID. And I don't think I ever told you this on our calls. I use this line in my staff meetings all the time with my team. And it helps us all. The saying you said, you know, quote, the only thing that happens automatically is bad things. We have to manufacture the good. And that just hit me like a ton of bricks that, because it takes work. It takes work to manufacture anything, right? Versus just another one you would say is, you know, letting the inmates run the asylum, that kind of thing. So to be working on the business, but going too far. So what advice do you have for us or expound on the whole concept of, you know, we have to manufacture the good, especially with the challenges of the year ahead?
Well, so whenever and wherever I said it, certainly was having a genius moment, because it is true that bad things happen organically and automatically and without any really work on your part. And one of the ways that occurs is small bad things magnifying and multiplying. Another saying I've said is that there's never one cockroach. There's a ton of them behind the baseboard coming out at night. So small little things. This somewhat relates to the broken windows, broken city theory. Giuliani, Eric, cleaned up New York the last time. The theory is if you don't cite the property owner for the broken window, it's only a matter of time before the entire property is a piece of shit, right? So if you don't ticket people for jaywalking, you are setting the stage for what you now have of massive looting and shoplifting and so forth. And when you ignore that long enough, you're setting the stage for what we have now of open, daylight, violent crime. So that's what happens in a business mostly, is little bad things get shrugged off or ignored, and then they magnify and multiply all on their own. You don't have to do anything to make that happen. Almost every good thing not only has to be manufactured, but it has to be maintained. So, yeah, you can kind of build a machine, but it's a machine that requires daily maintenance. There is some marketing that literally can be put on autopilot and functions on an evergreen level. There's more of this offline than there is online, by the way, but it is possible even online. But it's relatively rare. And typically, it's only going to be one part of your marketing machine that works that way. It's not going to be the whole marketing machine. And you aren't not only manufacturing the good. Let's take something isolated that we would manufacture. But we would manufacture the restaurant business, the system for the staff to use to capture birthdays of everybody who's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we made it. We made the little table tents. We've got the cards for the staff to get filled out, et cetera, et cetera. We call everybody together. We have a meeting. We give them the card. And to your point, most business owners, that now is the end of it. They mm-hmm. count that as a done. But you never get that one done. It's a perpetual doing. If you aren't counting the cards after every shift, and you aren't rewarding the person who's doing the best, and firing the person who's doing the worst and replacing them, then you built a machine that you don't maintain. I shopped yesterday at a Brighton store. Do you know what Brighton is? It's sort of a pricey, no. fancy pants, jewelry, and handbag store. And the mall I was at for part of the day was like empty. So there was nobody in the store really, but the three clerks. But they were on system. I mean, they were really good. Went in to get something that had been in a catalog. I got a mail order catalog, by the way. That media mm-hmm. has not died. And then rather than ordering it, since I was going to be at the mall anyway, I go get it. Well, they didn't have it in stock, but it's okay because we get it. Helps the store if you don't mind. We'll order it right now and free shipping. You'll have it in 2 days and we'll give you this extra gift that you wouldn't get if you ordered it out again. Great. Fine, wonderful. Then, while they're filling out paperwork for 10 minutes, I find something else in the store for somebody else. So now, instead of spending $400, I've spent $800. That thing I'm walking out with. Now, they pull me up. I haven't bought anything in that store since 2016. Record comes right up. My address has changed since then. Fix that at the same time we're doing the shipping. And she says, oh, I see we don't have your birthday month and day. We want that so we can send you a gift.
Absolutely.
Right. So I give them that. Oh, and I see we don't have your wife's name and birthday.
Wow.
Started, by the way, when I bought two purses, she said, are you buying one for your wife and one for your girlfriend, or what are you doing?
Sure.
So now she captured wife name and wife birth month and day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is about as good as it gets. Okay, so
yeah.
The people at Brighton built a really good piece of a marketing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, question number one is, do they do that every time?
Mm-hmm.
Do they do it when they're busy instead of empty? Well, the only way you're going to know that is
right.
If you're on their scale, if you're mystery shopping,
mm-hmm.
right? If somebody is monitoring how many people bought something yesterday, now how many of them are in our system? How many of them do we have birthday information for? Why did we sell something to 16 people yesterday that we didn't get birthday information for? If you're not doing that, it almost was a waste of time to build the machine in the first place.
Right.
Kind of like I drove collector cars for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not like Carla's new Lexus.
No, Dean Martin's car.
Yeah, if you're going to drive Dean Martin's Rolls Royce, or you're going to drive my 72 Javelin, or you're going to drive one of my Jeep Wagoneers, guess what? They require maintenance.
Oh, yeah.
To keep those babies running, you got to pay attention to them. And so they're really good machines,
mm-hmm.
but you can't, like, leave that thing sit for 3 months and come out and fire her up and go. It doesn't, you know, it just doesn't work that way. And it doesn't work with marketing or selling machines, if you will. I tell the story often. I'll do the two-minute version. I had a client with 1,200 locations came to me for better ads to get more leads.
Mm-hmm.
And very big rework of all their marketing. $2 million fee. And after mystery shopping some of the locations and recording some of the sales presentations, not role play, actual presentation,
mm-hmm.
and looking at the transcripts, and after I got done vomiting, I called the CEO and I said, listen, I'm going to redo my deal,
mm-hmm.
cut it in half. And you need to take the other million. You need to spend it fixing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And putting somebody in place to keep it fixed.
Right.
Because the last thing you need right now is more leads. You're peeing away half the leads you're getting now. And they refused, by the way, just to get our hands. But this is the thing, you know, the sensibilities of consumers do change.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to go adjust stuff to those sensibilities. And your people are never going to be focused like you're focused, if you are focused. On the key metrics and the key functions, that, you know, they're just not going to obsess over your phone script like you obsess over your phone script, as you should.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Therefore, somehow, you got to help that focus.
You've been listening to one of our Gold Members Only podcasts. Make sure you upgrade and become a Diamond member and get access to the Diamond Members Only podcast as well. On top of that, you'd also get access to the whole enchilada with all dance courses and so much more. So make sure you upgrade to Diamond now by going to diamondupgrade.com.